Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back to How We Human. We're going in on episode 3 today. So as usual, I've got Tony Devon with me. What's up, man?
Not much, man. Another episode.
What do we got on the agenda today?
Well, for episode 3, if you've given your life to this one thing, if you're deciding to spend your life being a creative and where that can take you.
Yeah, I mean, work-life balance, that's so crucial. I know, like, last episode we kind of focused in on the creative zen and what that means in terms of, you know, finding a calm place to make work and, you know, trying to get things in your life, you know, calm enough to where you feel like you can create. But really, I think today we're going to talk a little bit more about the maybe business side of it, getting your work out there for people to see, making sure that what you're doing is finding an audience. Because, you know, as wonderful as it is to make work, at the end of the day, we don't do it always for ourselves. We do it to get seen.
Evan, you talked about how you wanted to work through those lulls in your schedule, those downtimes, and 80% of your time, you're going to be marketing your work. And the other 20%, you're actually going to be creating your work. And that's a hard truth, I think, for a lot of creatives.
You're listening to the How We Human podcast with your hosts, Evan Kidd and Tony Devon.
Your work is only 20% of what you do. 80%, you may be, you know, twiddling your thumbs or emailing people.
We, at times, can tend to be more marketers than artists. Or do you think it really just all falls under the same umbrella?
I think it's safe to say we're marketers. I think some people wouldn't apply themselves to that label, but I think it's perfectly fine.
I wear that with pride. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because coming from the indie film world, I mean, really, you know, it's like this with any medium, but, you know, if you make something, you know, there's not a big studio bankrolling you with a marketing budget and you don't have a team. I mean, what a world it is when you can make something yourself, edit it yourself, take the means of, you know, getting the materials, production, everything into your own hands. People would have killed for that years and years ago. And I mean, I think that's like what's important to remember when the times get a little tough. And especially with going into other jobs that we may have held, you know, prior to, you know, focusing in more as artists or, you know, side hustles or anything like that. We kind of touched on that last time. But what lessons would you say you can take from stuff like that to apply to your life as an artist, whether you are doing it full time, part time, or just as a hobby? I mean, getting started, maybe not even out of high school yet, if there's anyone listening in that market, you know, what do you think people can do?
When I was at ECU, dude, if I was in the art building, I was in the library, like, and I was only home in my dorm room, like, sleeping. And that's the way I spent my time. Like, so if I'm not in the art building working, you know, 6 hours on a final or whatever, like, I'm in the library and I'm reading books, I'm researching, I'm trying to figure out how I can push. And still to this day, even after I've graduated, like, I still spend much of my time, you know, soaking in knowledge.
The news changes on the daily, on the hourly, by the minute. You have to stay focused and updated. You have to be plugged in as an artist. And I think part of that, you know, that 80% of the time that you're not making art, marketing is a huge part of that. But in addition to it, I really think there's a large kind of content consumption period that you might want to go into, because, you know, while you may not want to watch, you know, the basic news media every single day to get your inspiration.
Yeah, fake news is
Fake news, as it is known these days. I think there needs to be time for people to just go out there and consume things, whether it is, you know, news or a TED Talk or a documentary, or just, you know, having the time to really almost plug out of the world and, you know, get out of the you know, news where it's saying, you know, this happened today at hour one, this happened at hour two, so on and so forth. Taking time to say, I want to know about something that happened in 1963. I want to know about something that happened in 14 AD. Like, all these different things that you could be looking into, finding inspiration. I mean, you could watch a TED Talk about, you know, climate change or oceans or anything like that, and that could inspire your next piece. You don't know. And I think you need to have that time where your brain is in some sort of downward mode where it's resting, but also taking in information, because it's a different kind of intake than if you're watching news, than if you're, you know, trying to do something almost academic. It is academic. You're still learning, but you're doing it in a different way because it's not so structured. So you're taking it upon yourself. And you're really getting what I like to call continued education. I hate to say it, we live in a society now where, you know, the truth is not always valued. Education may not always be the top priority. So
you're exactly right.
You kind of do have to take it on yourself, you know?
Yeah, and at this, that's a big part of what we do, you know, as artists, especially, you know, pertaining to you and I, where I think as a filmmaker, I don't know, you get to really, you write your own scripts, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, I mean,
I've done a few others, but yeah.
So you're writing your scripts and you're actually getting to put your ideas, from your mind to the screen. And so, I mean, that's a gift in itself. And so to be able to share your ideas, your perspectives is important. And that's why people support the films and all these festivals go up every year.
Taking in that 80% of marketing, that 80% of learning into, you know, watching a video that interests you and really, you know, doing something outside of your exact technical craft so that when you do go into your craft, you can bring something new to it, because you don't want to just stagnate and you don't want to just repeat, okay, I know how to do this brushstroke. I know how to do this shot. I know how to put the microphone here. Like all these little techniques, no matter what your medium is, you know, once you master them, you've kind of mastered them, but you got to find new ways to apply them. Because, you know, for me, if I watch a good enough documentary or if I go to a gallery and I like see an exhibition that really moves me, I have to think about it. And I really have to say, okay, the next time I make art, or the next time I make content, how am I going to try to get a response like that? Or how am I going to try to say something that, you know, matters to others as much as that piece mattered to me? So it really makes me challenge myself and think more critically and really push boundaries that maybe I hadn't considered before.
Yeah. I mean, how many other jobs have you had outside of film?
Many. I would say, like, you know, going back into college and high school, you know, I've worked at sub shops and grocery stores, and I worked at a camera shop for a little while. And so that was probably like, you know, it was like a sales position. So, you know, you weren't actually like taking photos or making films. And that was back when they had like the development lab where people, you know, grannies would bring in like their disposable cameras and you'd have to like develop the things and the machines in the dark room. That was fun. Like, I enjoyed that job. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I worked a lot of that stuff kind of growing up and, you know, while I went to college a little bit. And then outside of that, you know, teaching drum lessons, because music is something, you know, that I, you know, still do today. I still teach drum lessons because, you know, I enjoy keeping music in my life, because, you know, I've drummed for close to 10 years now. And I think, like, when you teach to sharing knowledge and, you know, trying things out, because I think sometimes even outside of your medium, I'm not a full-time drummer, but when I do drum and when I do teach, I like notice things about myself and, you know, my own work ethic. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, you just don't catch some of that. So, yeah, I mean, I would say those are probably some of the things I could, you know, definitely could count on a hand. And like, I've done a lot of random odd jobs too, like focus groups and like studies and just weird things growing up to make some, you know, side cash, like, you know, take these vitamins and see, you know, make sure you don't die after like 2 weeks.
I mean, how does that come back, like, to your work? Like,
yeah, it's like one of those things that, like, sometimes you do have to go out of your comfort zone a little bit for a project. And like,
definitely
a couple things that I had done prior, you know, when I first started the job at the little photo camera place, you know, obviously place shut down because no one develops film anymore, really. Right. But, you know, at the time, like 5-6 years ago, you know, that was still sort of in a dwindling demand. And like, for me, it just, I was super intimidated by going into the dark room just as a teenager and trying to like figure out the machines. And like, you know, everyone there was like a lot older and, you know, they just seemed like they knew what was up. It's that worst feeling when you first start a job and everyone's like just flying around you and you just trying to keep up.
Yeah. I had that same feeling when I had my my first sales job, all I did was stand there and sell people TV. I don't know, man. It's when so many people are coming towards you for one thing.
Yeah,
it kind of makes you think outside the box. Like, to get your at the very least to get your job done.
Yeah,
you have to think out of the box, even in sales. So, yeah, man, it's like those same skills come into play.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, for me, I can think of two very distinct situations which sort of taught me about behavior and like keeping a cool head when you're in a workplace or working on a project. Because for me, my first job ever, I was working at a deli at this grocery store. If you're not from North Carolina, you may not have them, but this grocery store called Harris Teeter. And I was working in the deli, and like I was trying to like slice up the little, you know, lunch meats and stuff, and people would be like, I want a quarter pound of blah 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 blah. And so, you know, you'd have to go in that slicer and wear the like giant gloves so your finger didn't get cut off, and like, you know, all that stuff. It was nuts, man. It was like so fast paced. But like it was like my first job, and I remember like I for some reason, like, you know, eventually I got to that point where it was a grind, but like the first few weeks I was like obsessed with it, because, you know, it's like that first job you get, you just try to like not mess it up and like all that stuff. All those times those machines would jam, and those, you know, slicers, I mean, that's like a giant blade about the size of a tire, and it's just spinning so fast, like if you stuck your finger in it, you don't have a finger anymore. And that actually happened to one of the coworkers. I didn't see it, but, you know, it's pretty gnarly. Like, you have to really be careful. And yeah, it gets intense quick. And it's like a high stake environment, because like when there's like 20 people out there dinging the bell trying to get, you know, an order, like you don't really have time to think. So like I had to find this sort of zen mindset where it's like, okay, I'm aware of what's going on externally with all the people and all the orders and everything else, but internally I refuse to let that get to me. I refuse to let that break me. And it's like I just had to, you know, find a way to get the task done, but also understand that by freaking out, not only would I mess up the task most likely, but I could actually put myself in danger. And so that was kind of a situation where it's like, even if the boss was like, hey, we need to get this out quicker, blah, 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 like, you know, at the end of the day, you can't go from 0 to 10 just on one person saying something like that. And you can't let that, you know, just really spike you. Going into film, going into art, I mean, God, what I do all the time on set. I was filming the last 3 days. This is my first day off this week. I have had very, very little sleep, very, very little coffee.
Right there,
like, just stressful. Yeah, just like a stressful, you know, stressful week, but a fun week doing what I like to do. But on set, I mean, we had a situation yesterday where we were filming in the woods, and pretty much all our batteries had died. So like we had to go look for power, and we were scrambling a little bit. And luckily we found some power, but like we were in a pretty rural area, so it wasn't very easy to find. And so, you know, I knew that if like everyone freaked out about it, it would really rattle the actors we were working with, and the morale would get low, and it just wouldn't be a good look. So, I mean, really just knowing how to keep a cool head, understanding that in anything you do, whether it's filmmaking, whether you're at the deli slicing, you know, lunch meat, like, you know, things are gonna not work out perfect, and things can get stressful no matter what you do. So, I mean, I would say like that's a big lesson I strangely learned just in the, you know, kind of part-time job market, you know, and it was just trying to figure a way to keep that balance and that cool head.
Yeah. Is perfection a stupid goal?
Perfection is a great goal. I think it's impossible to ever really grasp it, because what one person thinks is perfect, someone else may despise. So a lot of times perfection, in my opinion, comes down to a matter of opinion. Mm. So maybe that's just my opinion. Yeah. So, you know, it might be wrong. But, you know, I think perfection is a great goal, because if you aim to the sky, to the stars, you're going to land somewhere up there. You know, it may not be exactly where you lock the target, but I mean, your artillery is like firing up. So at least that way you're aiming high. I mean, that's kind of the way I look at it. It works, because if you're trying actually to break boundaries, break molds and stuff, it's a lot better than just saying, yeah, this next piece I'm making, it'll be okay. That's my goal. Just okay. I mean, because if that's your goal, where is your actual piece right. going to land? I mean, I don't know.
They say aim high. Aiming high is like if you're aiming for okay content to produce something okay, then you're going to land okay. Like, you can throw a rock and it land like right near the shoreline. And like, but your goal, I mean, you could have threw it across the lake. Like, who knows? I was thinking about networking as creatives, you know, locally and, you know, abroad.
How do you network as an artist
exactly.
a tricky like, question.
I think, I mean, for me, a lot of my contacts have either come from one school or they've come right. from people I met on Twitter. And that's...
Yep, Twitter.
Yeah, and that's pretty much how I meet people. Like, in the city I'm in, it's not, you know, it's not a huge city. It's kind of rural. It's has some clubs, but there's really nothing for creatives. Like, there's a museum.
Yeah.
And museums switch out about every 3 months. It's hard to meet creatives there, I'll tell you that. Like, it's mostly
absolutely
people who are looking to buy art or something like that. It's never somebody my age or anybody that I can kind of like, hey, we should collab on a project together. Most of those people come through Twitter who are, you know, mm-hmm. doing the same thing. I don't know if I would consider that local or international. I don't know.
Internet is kind of a gray area, I think, because it's hard to say what that exactly is, because, you know, it's probably more national, international, technically, but it feels almost local because it's so in our reach and you can reach someone within seconds who's halfway across the earth. And that's really cool. And going back to networking, I know for me in film, and I mean, I go to these kind of creative meetups. The two cities I've lived in the longest, Greenville, North Carolina, and Raleigh, North Carolina. Now I live in Louisiana in Baton Rouge, which has a really cool arts community in some ways. And there are a lot of meetups. So I try to like look for those things on Facebook and like kind of just Google search art meetup, art gallery, art showing, like even outside of film, because what I found is that a lot of these people like to kind of travel in a similar circle. So even if you go to an event that's, you know, a sculpture show or something like that, you might meet someone there who does a completely different medium who may could link up with you. And plus, it's just cool. I mean, I think when you're around artists and art, it just gets me excited and makes me want to create more work. It never makes me want to create less work. So I think just kind of not being isolated is my biggest suggestion, whether it's Twitter or just community meetups. I mean, I think that's the one thing people always say. It's like, do you want to move to New York? Do you want to move to Los Angeles? And people say the reason to move is because you go in a coffee shop and half the people there are probably in your field, because you're going to a city where, you know, the majority of people probably do what you do, or a good majority in certain, you know, circles you may travel. Versus if you're in a smaller area, you know, you might be the guy in town who does that. And then the next guy isn't available. You know, he might live the next town over. So it's hard to say. I mean, it's definitely tricky. And, you know, for me, I've always found that, like, I like the big cities, but I think like mid-sized cities are very interesting to me, because you find a good mix of everything you might be looking for. I mean, some things might be more challenging, but at the same time, I find that mid-sized cities are sort of home to people who want to experiment a little bit more. I find, like, with what I do in independent film, sometimes I just need people who want to go out in the woods like I did yesterday and just like try a project and no one's getting paid. And it's just like, quick, yeah. What do you want to do? You know, it's like if you went to Los Angeles and did that, maybe you'd find someone. But like the mentality there is like, I can't do it unless you meet the day rate, unless you meet the Directors Guild of America requirements, blah, 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 blah. I mean, you know, it's a lot of rules, which, I mean, those things are not terrible and they serve a purpose for sure. But if you want to experiment, I find that sometimes you might have to carve out your own niche. I find people when I create a project, and a lot of the people I meet, I'll put like a casting call on Craigslist, or I'll put it on Facebook, or, you know, they have like other meetup websites and casting websites for casting crew stuff for film. I'll get people who live in the city or maybe the next city over who I've never met before, but come to understand and come to meet once we do the project. So it's like a lot of times I feel like a lot of that falls in place when you have a project or, you know, an exhibition or something to share. So what about you, man? What are your biggest things that you look for when you do go to network?
Man, and that you said the key word there is when you go to network, because, you know, working on One Accord, and it's all a solo project. It's one big solo project for me. So if I'm not, and it really is just like, you know, an all day thing. I don't think about anything else but my business, my brand, and what I have to do to get it to where I want to go. I don't even have time to think about networking as much as I should. That's something I've been working on the past 2 months. You know, it's been in the back of my mind, just trying to put myself out there more than anything. Because when you're out, you know, casually in a day, nobody knows who you are. Nobody knows, like, what you do, what you spend your time on. So it's sort of like going out and wearing who you are as a creative. You know, sometimes you may have to stick out a little more just to get people to approach you. Sometimes you may have to be more outspoken so you can reach the person that you're trying to reach. My real life is my networking event. I don't know how legit that is. I think it works for a time, and it's especially if you're able to go new places, especially. My day job, I'm working with 20 other people, and there's people coming in, customers, constantly. So, and I'm delivering too. So when I go out to these different houses, I'm meeting people daily, repeat customers, learn something new about them. You know, we kind of open up to each other.
You have to sort of find what's in your backyard. And like my motto is, if it's not in your backyard, maybe become the backyard and start something and see, like, okay, maybe I'll host a networking event. Sometimes it is about finding those people and like trying to round them all up, because when you're saying, when you're out delivering or like doing stuff in your job, you're interacting with people all the time. And like, especially you're talking about, you did the job as a salesman. I can only imagine a good car dealer. Like if you go to buy a car, like you almost feel like they're your friend at the end of it, if they're good. There's so many ways to use the world around us as artists. The world now is in a very interesting state. I'll put it that way. One of three paths. You can get totally sucked into it. You can totally ignore it. Or you can do something with it.
It's difficult, man.
Yeah, because it's like, how? Why? What? You know, there's so many specifics. Because I feel like so many people I know kind of swing in one of those first two directions. And it's so important to stay aware. Like, I'm not suggesting to not, because you got to stay up on stuff. That's how you become a good citizen. But on the other hand, I know way too many people that just stick their head in the sand and just say, I can't do anything about it. Bye. And I think that's a problem too. So,
right.
It's how do you digest it? That's what I'm trying to figure out myself. And I think a lot of people are, especially following the crazy year that was 2016. And I think trying to go forward as an artist, especially this year, okay, how do you make work? Okay, what are you going to make work about? What work matters to you now?
I think, you know, I think of a person like Kendrick Lamar, and how a lot of his music has been analyzed to be politically charged.
Definitely.
That's what I'm going to say, because I look at somebody like Lil Uzi Vert or Lil Yachty, and I can't say that for them. But they may, you know, then it comes right back around and bites me on the ass, where it's like, well, they didn't, you know, I haven't heard their opinion. Mm-hmm. What do they say about their music? You know, it's like, who? I don't know what they're saying.
They may not get very political. Here's why. They have to sell a lot of their material.
But doesn't it make sense?
To a lot of different people.
If somebody wants to get their word out, and we have something like fake news, why can't people just create 100% politically charged music and then like just put it on the
news? Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I agree with that. I mean, I think you're going to start seeing a lot of that now. Like Kendrick, he's been doing that, like in one way or the other. And I think his last album, Damn, that pushed it even further. I mean, how could it not after going through the year that we had last year? But I also think, on the other hand, just like you said, you have people like Lil Yachty who don't get into all that, and they probably won't, because so far that's not their lane. And you can make the argument to just say, okay, they do their thing, Kendrick does his thing, it's apples and oranges, and it kind of is. But at the same time, you know, we don't know their full opinion. We haven't talked to them, and it's like, maybe just because they haven't expressed it, does that mean they feel a certain way? It's hard to say. It's hard to say.
And when Kendrick raps, everybody listens. Okay.
Absolutely. And, how can you not? Yeah. You know,
and the same is true for Drake. Like, Drake is a little less politically charged, I think we all agree. But it's like, if Drake wanted to rap politically, I probably wouldn't listen just because he's Drake. But even though Kendrick can rap politically, even if he doesn't, I'll still listen to him.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, he's got some songs that don't touch politics with a 10-foot pole. And then he's got others that are just totally politically charged. And they're on the same album. And I think it's that versatility that's really interesting. And if you have someone like Kendrick, though, I think what makes him stand out is he's such a storyteller. And his stuff is... It sort of mocks the style and what a lot of other people are doing. And he's kind of saying... You know, he says outlandish things sometimes, but he says them almost jokingly, because he's kind of it's almost like occasional satire on his own stuff, which I think is really cool.
Using a lot of different elements from a lot of different people in the game now. And he's doing it his own way, man. He's doing it his own way, and it's really working for him.
And I'm sure even someone like Kendrick learned from maybe jobs he worked before he was a rapper, but even his earlier works, and he built upon that, and he said, I'm not going to do this next time, I am going to do that next time. I'm sure, because his process is so intensive. I've seen the interviews with him, I've seen the way he thinks, the way he works. I mean, he's just different from a lot of the other people out there who are making material. I mean, it's not even just rap, I mean, it's just music. Like, I talked to someone recently who was talking to me about how, you know, a lot of the material coming from him, I mean, yes, it's rap, but it could almost be something entirely new.
Like a genre in itself.
Yeah. And you might see more stuff coming out within that. I mean, when the first time I listened, I mean, now it's like the Kendrick podcast, but how can you not make it the Kendrick podcast? Because he's talented. It's like...
He sold 6,000 units in his first week, and
no one sells stuff anymore.
Nobody
Let's
sells
just keep that
many
in mind.
Albums anymore. Like,
I mean, to sell, like, no, yeah, not to stream, to sell.
Drake's last album sold like 200,000 units.
Yeah,
and that's including his Apple streams, his deals with Apple. Kendrick doesn't have any like backings by Apple or Spotify or anything.
This whole episode, it was talking about things we've learned, things you've reflected on, and things you've carried into the present. And I think that can totally apply to art, to your job, to watching a year unfold of politics. I mean, I think you can apply lessons, because if we're not learning, what are we doing? Like, we're going to just repeat the same mistakes. We're going to trip over the same rock. I think someone like Kendrick is an interesting artist to watch, because A, he's very technically proficient. B, and what's most important, is that I think he actually has something to say. It's like so many other artists, music or any other medium, sort of recycle. And it's very difficult to be totally 100% unique. And that's what I think Kendrick is trying to do. You know, I mean, the guy, I mean, he can make a bad song, I guess, but I don't find many of them. I don't. And it's, I have to really dig and like, look.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. It is a different experience. Listening to Kendrick, as an aside to listening to other artists, I mean, Big Sean is one of those artists too. My first song I heard of Big Sean was some freestyle he did over a Biggie joint.
Yeah, was like, that one of the
way back in like
Dat Piff
07? Yeah, so it had to be something like that.
And, had to be on Dat Piff.
And the same thing is happening to Kendrick, where people are going back and seeing his catalog. So
I saw like this video on Twitter that was like the evolution of Kendrick Lamar. It was like a 5-minute video, and it had like someone on a VHS camera filming him. I don't know what year it was, probably like 2006 or 7. And like he was just a kid pretty much then, but like you could just tell he just sounded different. Like he wasn't trying to just like kind of copy and paste what people had done before. And like that's the hardest part about an artist, is to establish yourself as someone new and someone unique and really holding on to it. Because I mean, obviously your styles and influences will change, and like your material, you don't want it to ever sound exactly the same, but you do want to obviously find your place and find the way that you're going to speak to the world.
I just had a thought about fashion. Fashion designers don't come out like rappers do.
Yeah.
You know, rappers come out, you know, brand new, maybe every 3 years, there's like a batch of new rappers. Fashion designers, the newest one we've had is Kanye, which is weird to say, because like, why do they have to be Kanye? That's what it comes down to. And then he just does his Kanye thing. And,
yep, that's the best way to describe it.
And he just bodies the fashion world however he decides to. When I was in fashion school, all these different people aspired to be designers, to be fashion designers, and to really like make their imprint. But it's like I haven't heard from them since. Like, they're interning and they're working still like underneath somebody. And we're supposed to be millennials. Like, it comes down to that. It's like, wait, I thought we were the chosen ones. I guess you're not. And then,
and then myth busted. Yeah. Hey, kids, it's a dark world.
But then you get on Twitter and you see like so many people like really taking this day to day and promoting their work, you know, branding their work, selling their work, creating new opportunities, collaborating. These are becoming the names we're close to. We may not see them as big brands like Adidas or Puma or even Kith, but it's like that's part of it. It's like exactly why these people are on social media in the first place.
We talked about Chance the Rapper in that first episode, and I mean, like, he's like the version of that on steroids, but you know.
Chance is like the MVP of everybody on Twitter.
Yes.
Because everybody's indie, everybody's doing their own thing, and Chance did it and went on Ellen and performed and was Saturday Night Live and, you know, all these different opportunities, and we still don't understand. Like, this guy is still independent. They have their own waves that are being stirred up, and these are our people. This is how we're human.
You know, we're trying to connect, and that's what social media is about. It's about connecting and about placing people with like-minded interests together. It is the digital version of networking. Yeah. We talked about networking earlier. That's all it is. It's putting people together in a place and having a conversation. Now, could your conversation be more meaningful if you were in a physical room? I tend to always think yes, but you don't always get the opportunity to get into that room, but maybe once or twice a year. So to have that opportunity like stowed away in your pocket, whether you're an artist or not, you've got a phone in your pocket probably right now. Whenever you finish listening to this podcast, you're probably gonna check your phone and like you'll catch up on your stuff. And like that's ingrained in the culture. That's not going anywhere. And so because it's not going anywhere, what are you gonna do with it? And like as an artist, as a creative, as anyone, you know, how are you gonna capitalize on it? Whether it's marketing or just reaching out to keep in touch with that kind of band that maybe hasn't blown up yet, but a year or two from now could go somewhere.
Right.
And you could help support, you know? And I think it's a really interesting way to stay engaged with not only your own art and your own creativity, but that type of stuff of so many others worldwide.
I couldn't have said it better.
So I guess kind of in conclusion, what do you think is the best takeaway and lesson that we can all go out there with, no matter what we're doing, in terms of finding a community that we can fit into, whether it's digitally or in person, or even just carving out that niche to be the Kendricks and Chances of the world, to kind of go out there and take over?
It's there's a lot of groups. I mean, I say start slow. Go to LinkedIn, go to Facebook, go to Twitter. Find you a group of people and just put yourself out there. Don't be afraid to make mistakes, because you're going to make them anyway. That's why we're human. What makes us human is that we all make mistakes, maybe. So, you know, don't overthink it.
Yeah, don't be afraid to make a splash. I mean, that's the thing as artists, like, you cannot worry about the audience. You have to get your work to an audience.
You're right. You have to know.
And that's what drives people crazy. That's what drives people crazy. That's like, you have to get your work to the audience, but you also can't care about the audience in terms of, you know, working on your stuff. You can take feedback for sure, but you can't let that be the end all be all of what you do.
Right. Right. No, it's, you know, we're people. We develop, we grow, we make mistakes. So whatever your audience is, they have to understand that. You have to make that very clear to them early on that I'm glad you guys are riding with me.
Yeah, you know, that's what this is about.
Strap up and we're gonna go.
That's what this is about. So next time, guys, we're doing an entire episode about Kendrick, because we could talk about that for 3 or 4 hours, and I think we could have an interesting episode. But keep up with us on social media. Go check us out on Twitter at Howie Human Pod. Find us on Facebook, Howie Human Podcast. Leave us a question. We're always happy to answer it. We've got some interviews coming up in the next few episodes, so definitely be on the lookout for that. Anything else you want to say to take us out?
Yeah, hit us up, like Evan said on Twitter, Howie Human Pod, Mr. Evan Kidd, Tony_Devon.
Talk to us. We want to hear it. Yeah. We want to hear what you think.
Send us your questions, please. I'm always on my phone, like Evan said.
Like we said, don't be scared to reach out, guys. Remember, you heard it here first.
Yep. That's good.
Yep. All right, cool, man. All right, well, y'all take care out there. We'll see you next time.